Hello and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Overthrows podcast. I'm Behram Kazi, who you can find at Def Mango on Twitter. And with me is Estelle Vasudevan, who you can find at Estelle underscore Vasude, the number one on Twitter. And we're here to review the England versus Sri Lanka test series. England managed to win the three-match test series by a margin of 2-1. And of course, as we know, Sri Lanka today managed to thump England by 8 wickets at the Oval to win their fourth ever test on English soil out of 21 attempts, if I'm not wrong. How does it feel, Estelle? You did predict this. We both did. We both thought that Sri Lanka could steal a test here.
It's a funny thing because I think before the series, 2-1 was optimistic, right? I mean, 2-1 was really optimistic. But having watched the series, and I told you guys this in our little WhatsApp group, like I'm a bit disappointed that they didn't do better, because you felt like throughout the series, there were real opportunities for Sri Lanka to turn over this English side, right? I mean, not England's best bowling attack, and barring Root, the batting, sorry, and Jamie Smith as well, England's batting wasn't really the usual type of, you know, where you see them scoring a lot of like 500 plus runs, right? You didn't see that from them. So, yeah. Sorry to be a bit of like Sangha's dad, but I'm happy they won today, obviously. But yeah. Also, there's that feeling that, you know, what if a few of those moments went in Sri Lanka's favor? It could have been a completely different result.
Yeah, I think not just Sangha's dad, but the majority of brown parents, they have that energy, right? Why did you get a B? It should have been an A. That's exactly what Estelle is doing over here, guys. But I get what you're saying, of course. In hindsight, when you look at the series now, you're like, oh, there could have been a few moments here and there, and Sri Lanka could have been in pole position to even win this series. We're going to talk about the last two tests, both London tests, Lords and the Oval. We did cover Old Trafford in an earlier live show, so we won't be touching too much upon that. If you guys want that analysis, you can go and look for it on our YouTube. We've also got some people in the comments. We've got Sag, who is a big-time Estelle fan. Teekshana Praveen, Aniket Mohan, Bharat Reddy, and Amzi. So, hello to you guys as well. And well, I suppose the first thing that we must talk about is Pathum Nisanka. Estelle, you did want him to get some game time on this tour. And then, you know, he played at Lords but failed. But he was playing at first drop, so he replaced Kusal Mendes. And in the third test at the Oval, he was slotted in ahead of Madushka. And then Kusal Mendes was back at first drop. And Nisanka came, saw, baz-balled and conquered the Oval. 64 of 51 in the first dig. And then an unbeaten 127 off 124 deliveries in the fourth innings to take Sri Lanka home. He cut and hooked the ball to perfection. One for the ages, really.
Yeah, one of the better hundreds we've seen overseas, haven't we, from a Sri Lankan batter? And I mean, I think I warned everyone who has ever listened to me that if you like watching Pathum Nisanka in limited overs cricket, you have to see him in Test cricket because he's made for that format. And what I love about the innings was, so when Nisanka started off his career, he was very much, like I mentioned, you know, a multi-day type of batter, right? He took his time to score runs. And there was a lot of criticism when he was pushed into the limited overs teams because he didn't seem to be able to get going in the power play overs and, you know, used to get stuck. He worked on that game and he has become one of the better limited overs cricketers, batters in the world right now. And then to see him come into the test team and use that and also add to it his strengths in red ball cricket, he looked really good today. I thought, you know, he wasn't defensive, but his aggression was also, you know, not overly aggressive like some of the batters we saw from England, right? Where they were going for shots that were not there and kind of opening the doors to the Sri Lankan bowlers. Nisanka wasn't doing that, right? You didn't see him driving uppishly much as we did in the first innings. And he just looked like he belonged. I think it, again, and I'm sure we'll talk a lot more about Kamindu Mendis as well. I think it goes to show how important it is to pick a batter that who's in form and who is in that mental state where he has confidence in his ability and knows his game well enough that he's comfortable in doing what he needs to be done in the middle. Because, yeah. I mean, he could have come into this game and, you know, played cautiously and tried to, you know, secure a spot for him. Because, as you know, like, there were so many changes for Sri Lanka in the three tests, right? Kusal Mendy's out, then he's back in, Madhushka with the gloves, Madhushka dropped, you know, so there are a lot of changes. So he could have gone the safe way and tried to just secure a spot, because Sri Lanka have four more tests coming this year, right?
Yeah.
But he did go for it, and he was aggressive right from the word go, and just really good to watch. I'm sure even a lot of the neutrals would have enjoyed it, because a lot of non-Sri Lankans know him as, you know, this limited overs batter. He's got a double 100 in ODI cricket. He's been open in the batting for Sri Lanka in T20 and ODI cricket for the last couple of years. But in Test cricket, you feel like that's what he's made to do. Like, that's the format he's made to play.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what you said. I believe in the preview when we were discussing Sri Lanka, you mentioned how Pathum Nisanka, you know, first came into limited overs cricket and he was a bit of an accumulator. And then recently we've seen him really, you know, shift gears and he started to attack a lot more. And you mentioned how maybe the format that is best suited to his game is Test cricket. He plays some delightful shots. Like I mentioned his cut and hook earlier. He was, you know, on the button when it came to those two shots today. I, you know, gave him the moniker Pathum Niswanky because his shots were so swanky, right? He's just such an attractive bat to watch. And to your point, you know, he could have seen off the new ball and he could have been cautious, but he gave England a taste of their own medicine. And that is what was perhaps most attractive of, you know, or the most attractive part of this game when it comes to Nisanka. And then fourth inning stuns are always difficult. If you score them at better than run a ball, they become even more special. So I feel like Sri Lanka have, you know, found a gem. And he's been around for a while, but I feel like the way Nisanka has developed in maybe the last couple of years, he might have just arrived. You know, his golden period might be just around the corner now. And he can be a mainstay for Sri Lanka in all three formats. If he can continue to bat like that, well, I mean, then he's a serious, serious talent.
Yeah, absolutely. And what is good about it is, again, right, the ability to grow with the game. And that's what we saw in limited overs cricket, right? And despite those changes that he made to his white ball game, he's been able to come and adapt to difficult conditions. I mean, England is always tough, right? You're coming into the test team after a couple of years out, coming and adapting within four innings and playing an innings like that. I think it goes to show how talented he is and how high a ceiling he has, not just because of, you know, pure talent, right? Like, if, I mean, I'm sure you can relate as someone who covers Pakistan cricket a lot. Talent is never is never lacking in countries like Sri Lanka and Pakistan, right? But it is everything beyond that that they have to reach. And Nisanka has shown the ability to have to change his game and to adapt to where the modern game is going. And that's great. And just thinking back, we recorded a Crick Picks episode recently and we were talking about Laura Woolward, right? 25 years old. She's already one of the best batters in the world, right? Nisanka is only 26. So he has a long way to go in international cricket. And I mean, if he can keep growing and if he can keep doing what he's been doing over the last couple of years, right, and keep that mentality, I'm sure he'll end up as one of Sri Lanka's best bats, best all format batters.
Yeah, I mean, 26 years old, high ceiling, and also ice cold celebrations. Like the way he just, you know, kind of lifts his bat and everything. It's fun to watch. I like the fact that, you know, he's not someone who gets super animated. He's someone who is a bit within himself. And even that looks kind of, you know, intimidating in a different kind of way. And if you look at this test match, right, first day, bad light, all of that stuff. And Ben Duckett then scoring 86 runs off 79 deliveries, who, by the way, I feel is the best product of Bazball. I don't think anyone can hit consistent scores at, you know, that quick a scoring rate or anyone else other than Ben Duckett, because he does this very, very consistently. And then, of course, Ollie Pope was under a lot of pressure, you know, before this test match because he wasn't, you know, able to score many runs. And he doubled down on all his critics and silenced them by scoring a run a ball or close to run a ball 154. things were looking quite grim for Sri Lanka at the start of this test match. England at one point were 261 for the loss of 3 wickets, and then they buckled for 325. So lots of twists and turns in this one.
Yeah, definitely. And I remember at the first day of play, Sri Lanka, after opting to bowl first, didn't really make use of any of the conditions, right? And it looked like it would be one of those games where, you know, they're really not in it mentally and it's going to end very quickly. But I thought, and we discussed this in our preview as well, is that with the way England play, they're always going to give you opportunities to get back into the game. And I think they did exactly that, right? They were 290 for 5, if I'm not mistaken, or 280 for 5.
Something like that.
Yeah, lost all those wickets very, very quickly. And again, because they score quickly and they lose wickets quickly, there's always an opportunity for the other side to get back into the game. And I think that was the key for Sri Lanka, bowling them out for 325. Because at one stage, it really looked like they would end up with 450 plus, right? And they do it really, really quickly. But I thought Sri Lanka's bowling also, they kind of found their rhythm in that second day of play and were able to restrict England's batters and you know, just create opportunities for themselves. So lots of twists and turns, but it goes back to, you know, the way England play, right? There's always going to be an opportunity for the opposition because they are so ultra aggressive and they also want to portray themselves as ultra aggressive.
Yeah. I mean, Ollie Pope, for instance, might have silenced his critics with the bat. 154 runs were a lot. But then again, you know, certain people like Michael Vaughan were on his case that he shouldn't be captain. I don't get this because clearly he's just filling in for Ben Stokes. It's not like England have named a new captain. Why put the new guy under so much pressure? I mean, who else could they have gone for, right? Chris Wokes, perhaps? I can't think of another person. So I think maybe there was some undue criticism from the media as well, the English media. But, you know, ultimately, I feel like Sri Lanka played really, really good cricket and, you know, won that last test match on merit. But what that has done is that England's chances of qualification for the World Test Championship final are over. So there is a bit of context over there.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, going back to Ollie Pope, I think Michael Vaughan's comments mostly were, I thought, unfair because they were personal in nature, right? They were talking about Ollie Pope's personality. And it seems like every time Michael Vaughan says something, he has to be proven wrong. If I'm not mistaken, he had kind of reignited the discussion about having the two-tier system for Test cricket and Sri Lanka having to be in, you know, the second division or whatever. So it's an interesting one. I think England was already kind of on the fence about, you know, making the World Test Championship final. They needed to do a lot of work to get in there. And with this loss, unfortunately or fortunately, they're out of contention. But it's interesting because they do play a lot of tests, right? And you have to wonder if that's one of the reasons why they're finding it kind of difficult to make their way into the final, because they have to contend with a lot more competition and not to forget, like, you know, players' bodies, right? They have to take care of their quicks, their batters, right? Injuries come up. So all those things, maybe it is a reason why they are struggling to kind of make their way to the top of that table.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, they already were almost out, you'd have to say, and they had an outside chance of qualifying if they won a host of games, and losing this one kind of puts an end to that. And I mean, this is England's second iteration of Bazball, so they're kind of tweaking the model a bit and everything, but generally the approach is the same. And even if you look at their third innings, right, now Sri Lanka had taken heaps of wickets in a cluster, and England were, you know, what, 81 for 7, was it, or 82 for 7, something like that. And that's where Jamie Smith comes out. Yeah, 82 for 7. So Jamie Smith comes out and he plays that rear guard knock of 67 off 50. He's being compared to Adam Gilchrist even after that knock. And, you know, he did give Sri Lanka a bit of a scare in the third innings because, hey, he took the target past 200 and all of a sudden England were back in the game. And he also scored his maiden test ton in the first test of the series, if you remember. How good has Jamie Smith been all summer? And do you think that, you know, he's going to be a mainstay for England in years to come?
Yeah, I was really, really impressed with him. I mean, I'm not going to go into technicalities, but he looked like a really solid bat. And like you mentioned, his ability, I think, to be aggressive, but also to play, you know, play the situation was impressive. Because I think in that innings itself, he started off pretty slowly, right? But when he started to realize that he might run out of partners, that's when he started going for his shots. And I think, when you talk about baseball and tweaking it and stuff like that, right? I think not everybody understands how it's supposed to be played. Like, a lot of people think it's simply, you know, all-out aggression. But it really isn't the case, right? I mean, if you look at guys like Joe Root, he can be aggressive, but he can also play the role where he's not scoring too many runs, but he's keeping the other team at bay, right? So I think Jamie Smith definitely has the characteristics to kind of be that type of player. And to be honest, like, I'm sure there were a lot of questions about having him at six and playing the extra bowler, but he's justified that decision because he's been really solid in that position, right? And like you mentioned, England's tail have been really good in this series. So there would have possibly been some doubts in Sri Lanka's mind when he started getting going because they've had trouble dismissing those batters. So I thought really impressive. England have tested out a lot of aggressive batters. I mean, guys like Jos Buttler haven't been able to crack test cricket, right? But Jamie Smith, he really does look like, you know, he's got the measure of things.
If you love cricket on a deep spiritual level and want to be involved when no matches are being played, we have the game for you. Hit Wicket is so good that Harsha Bogle and me have backed it. And that's a lot of nerd energy behind one game. This is a strategic game of cricket, and it's not just about whacking your screen really, really hard with your finger. This isn't a game where you swipe all around to try and hit the ball. You work out what works best based on real-life cricket situation. For instance, dot balls bring pressure. Ones and twos lead to fours. There is no way you can just hit a six every ball or take wickets all the time. This is proper cricket. Yet it still has some special gaming powers in there as well. And so this game is about playing, but also building and managing your team. You are the batter, bowler, owner, coach, captain. It's your dream, right? And there are no ads. It's just cricket. Download HitWicket now and bring out the cricket legend in you. Because HitWicket is a cricket game made for you and supported by other cricket nerds. Stick it in your pocket today.
He's had a dream start to his test career, and his first international assignment or overseas assignment is just around the corner as well, with England set to tour Pakistan. I can probably bet some money that he'll do well in Pakistan as well. And what I like about him is that he's got all of these gears, right? He can play in different sort of modes, and as per the game situation, he can kind of stick it out and he can counter-attack. And he uses his feet really well as well. Also, some people in the comments are super perturbed that I used the Gilchrist thing in comparison. That's not me. That's Paul Collingwood. So go give him hate. And yeah, stop making this about where I belong from. Anyway, let's move forward. Before we get into further performances, I just want to talk about some interesting themes from this test. Chris Wokes bowled four balls of off-spin due to bad light. Now, who saw that one coming?
Yeah, it was really interesting to see him bowl. I thought it was a bit... It wasn't a good move from England. I mean, yes, you want to keep... You want to be out there because the batters obviously want to go back in. But I feel like, just like Sri Lanka did in... I think it was the first test where they opted to bowl spin because they wanted to stay out there, but England looked really comfortable. The ball got worn out. I thought it was kind of, it didn't make sense because you want to be able to attack the batting side, right? If you're staying out there, you want to be able to attack them. And Wokes didn't look like he'd bowled too much off spin, even in the nets. But yeah, it was interesting to see. I mean, I heard that, wasn't it Nasser Hussain who had fallen off his seat when he heard that Wokes is bowling off spin?
Yeah, I mean, it's so interesting. I read a tweet which said that he can bat, he can bowl seam up, he can bowl off spin. He takes terrific catches as well, which he did, remember, to dismiss Nisanka in the first innings. He took an absolute screamer at cover. And yeah, I mean, he is quite a complete cricketer, I suppose. Speaking of the blinder that he took, this was such a weird test series with respect to catching. We saw some absolute screamers, and then we saw some howlers, like some dollies being dropped from both teams. Both Sri Lanka and England caught some great catches, dropped some very, very easy chances. And it's been a bit of a theme now. If you look at recent cricket, that's kind of where it's going.
Yeah, I mean, that's... It's a very interesting thing because there's no kind of reasoning you can give, right? Like, I mean, sometimes in white ball cricket, you can say the lights are low, whatever. They don't play a lot of day-night cricket or, you know, there can be some way to reason it out. But just off the top of my mind, Josh Hall dropped a really easy catch of Dhananjay De Silva, I think, on day three or day two. And Asita Fernando put down an easy catch of Ollie Pope, if I'm not mistaken. So those are just two that I can remember. It's very interesting. I mean, even the teams that we term as good fielding sides or good fielders seem to be putting down some catches now.
Yeah, this has been a trend for a while. I've been noticing it. And this series kind of epitomized it because you saw some wonderful takes, like proper highlight reel stuff. And then some of those catches we could have caught, Estelle. Let's be real, right? Absolute sitters. But anyway, let's move on to the performances now. And I know you're dying to talk about him, so let's just go there. Kamindu Mendis, 113 at Old Trafford, 74 at Lords when his team was down in the dumps, and then 64 at the Oval when once again Sri Lanka needed a bit of inspiration. He does average below Bradman now in Test cricket, unfortunately. But he sure has staked his claim in tough batting conditions. And I mean, he's got to be batting higher up in the order in the future, I would assume.
Yeah, I do think he might move up the order. I like that they didn't move him up the order in this series because I think the messaging needs to be clear to a guy who's just coming into the side, right? If you prepare him saying that he's going to bat in the low middle order, I think you need to stick to that at least for a couple of series before kind of moving him up and down. New Zealand is in Sri Lanka, so two tests to come. It'll be interesting to see whether he does move up. Because Sri Lanka in a bit of a kind of a fix, right? Because Pathum Nisanka seems to have now made his pot as Dimuth Karunaratne's opening partner. But you still have a problem at number three. And none of the three seniors who bat in that middle order really look like number three batters. Like you have Angelo Matthews at four, Chandimal five, and Dhananjay De Silva at six. So whether they will be willing to move one of them up, or they bring Madhushka or Kusal Mendis in and move everybody one spot down to bring Kamindu up, will be interesting to see. I do think he's probably 3-4-5 better. He needs to be in the top five. Really good to watch again, right? I mean, when he's in form and when he's in his flow, he's really good to watch. Again, to be the disappointed parent figure. I thought maybe he should have capitalized on his start in this game because the conditions weren't that tough to bat in, right? And Sri Lanka got, I mean, after difficult start, both he and Dhananjay De Silva did get good, like they got in, but both are dismissed in the next session, right? In the morning session. So I think that would be a bit of a disappointment for him. But, you know, overall, he was named MVP for Sri Lanka as well for the series. So I think, I mean, overall, it's a brilliant start to him. And a lot of eyes obviously will be on him now. So four tests to go this year, two in Sri Lanka. I think he would be really hoping to get some big runs because I don't think the guys like Pathum and Kamindu who have such huge first-class averages are satisfied with 70s and 80s, right? They want the big hundreds.
I mean, I'm completely satisfied with Kamindu, so I'm going to be the white parent in this case and tell him that he did a good job, Buster. And I mean, look, I feel like, you know, Kamindu is ready for test cricket and he's got four tests with, what is it, two or three coming up versus New Zealand at home, right?
Two against New Zealand and then two against South Africa in South Africa.
Yeah, so at least the New Zealand ones, you expect him to really, you know, cash in. And he's proven his worth, you know, versus the moving ball and, you know, against lateral movement. Even though he was coming at number 8 or 7 or whatever, you know, really low down the order, I feel like this is still a very, very positive start and kind of, you know, speaks to his credentials as a test match batter. Of course, he was MVP, and I saw your tweet. You weren't too happy with that because there was another hero amongst Sri Lanka's ranks in this series. Right-arm seamer Asitha Fernando only managed 3 wickets overall in the Oval Test, but he took 17 at 24 apiece in the series. 6 wickets at Old Trafford, including a fourfer, and then 8 wickets at Lords, including 5 for 102, I believe, in the first innings, got his name on the honours board, and then 3 more wickets to finish off in the same test, 8 wickets in total. That is one hell of a tour, right? And I think that, you know, out of all the Sri Lankan seamers, he is probably the least spoken of because Lahiru Kumara is the enforcer, so he gets, you know, either some love or some hate. Vishwa is, of course, a left-handed or left-arm seamer, so that's a rare commodity. And Asitha just kind of falls under the radar often, and this series is where he really kind of, you know, rose to the occasion and said that I'm here as well.
Yeah, I mean, he's been steadily getting better, right? He's ranked 8th in the world, so he's obviously been doing some, he's been good for a while now.
Yeah.
He's, I think, in this series, it's a, like I mentioned before, right? It could have, the result could have been the opposite. It could have been 2-1 to Sri Lanka. And the reason it was that close is because of Asitha, because he sometimes, it was just him, right, keeping Sri Lanka in the game, particularly in that first and second tests, just relentless with the ball. He's the type of bowler who, you know, the captain will give him the ball and ask him to bowl 10 overs on the trot and he'll probably do it, right? So that's the type of kind of character, workhorse he is. And I'm glad that he's so. I think when you look at teams like Sri Lanka, a lot of the times their players get highlighted is when they play one of the big three teams. Hmm. And I think all the good work he's done up to now hasn't really been noticed. But now he's playing England in England.
Yeah.
He's put in a performance where it really matters, right? Because a lot of people are watching. So that's good for him. I'm again, like, if I was to pick Sri Lanka's best player of the series, it would have to be him, because that bowling attack, not a lot of people had too many hopes about them, but they're the ones who've brought that win in, at the Oval as well, right? I know, yeah, he didn't take too many wickets, but it's a combination of those 4 bowlers, those 4 quicks who featured right throughout the Test series, who brought that success to Sri Lanka. And Sri Lanka have had lots of issues with fitness, but Asitha has, I hope I don't jinx it, but he's stayed fit now for a while, right? And he's been able to fill the gaps. He's been brought into the limited over sides when there have been injuries, you know, things like that. So he's that type of bowler, like I said, right? He will give you his 100% every single time you give him the ball. And it's good to see him getting results like this, because you don't, sometimes you can bowl really, really well, but end up with no wickets, right? In a place like England, particularly, where the ball moves. So it's good to see him actually get the results.
Yeah, it's kind of ironic that he did so well in the first 2 test matches that Sri Lanka lost, 6 and 8 wickets in total at Old Trafford and Lords. And then at the Oval, he only managed 3. But you know what? The rest of the seamers were so good that it doesn't even matter. And I mean, that third innings, where England were kind of rolled over by Sri Lanka's seamers, it was probably my favorite day of the entire series, because I'm a sucker for fast bowling, right? And, you know, Vishwa Fernando, he took 3 for 40 and he got Joe Root and Harry Brook out. Very similarly, he kind of pitched the ball leg stump and it was coming in to the right-hander. Akib Javed said that it reminded him of Chamin Dawas. And, you know, Vishwa had a very poor series. We've seen him do well in the past. That spell in which he got Root and Brook, I think that kind of broke England's back.
Yeah, he was fantastic. And I think it's very interesting to see guys like Vishwa Fernando get some attention, because there were periods during this series and after the first test where people were talking about Sri Lanka should have bought Dilshan Madushankar on this tour. What are they doing, wasting their time with Vishwa Fernando. But Vishwa Fernando has been good consistently for Sri Lanka over the last few years. Sri Lanka play in Gaul when they play at home. There aren't opportunities for them to play 3-4 quicks, right? It's very rare that you see two or three playing. And Vishwa has been the guy who's been carrying that bowling attack for a long period of time, right? And he's a very skillful bowler. I think we saw that, like you mentioned, in that spell, right? He is probably a guy who depends on rhythm a lot because he is not the, you know, he can't generate the pace that a Lahiri Kumara can, right? So he does depend on rhythm a lot. He had a really good stint at Yorkshire. So he knows the kind of conditions. And I think it's really good that they brought him back because it was, to me, it was strange that they dropped him after one game in England because he's the guy who you've depended on for 2 years, right? Hmm. You don't give up on him after one game. So, happy to see him doing well. Of course, Dilshan Madushankar might turn out to be a fantastic test bowler. Yeah. But it goes to show that you need to persist and kind of trust the experience of bowlers like Vishwa and Asita, right? Because they've been there for a long time. They have the skills to succeed in conditions like this. And even I was thinking about those two dismissals because there was a little bit of Wasim also, right? The in-swingers. Yeah. Nowhere close to the pace. And don't come at me in the comments.
Yeah, be careful. They might annihilate you in the comments.
He's not Wasim, but little bit of that Wasim skill and, you know, Chami the Vaz skill of bringing the ball late into the batter.
You want to swing wildly at the internet like you've got the new pill in your hand, but you keep getting dead batted. Find the movement you want with NordVPN. They are our protection against terrifying cyber threats and wide battered geo blocks. NordVPN will help you get through any rights restrictions so you can watch all the cricket you want. We aren't always happy with the wickets we're on. Sometimes we need a change. NordVPN can switch your virtual location so your IP address is ready to cash in. So if you need to get around the internet's rules, or I suppose in our case, laws, select NordVPN. They can help you watch a game on a cheaper stream in another country. Give NordVPN the ball and let them penetrate all your vast internet issues. Because if you need a VPN, go Nord. Use nordvpn.com/Kimber to get a huge discount off your NordVPN plan plus 4 additional months for free. It's completely risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. You can also receive a 20GB daily data voucher. The link is in the show notes. Protect your computer like a big hitter is coming for you at nordvpn.com/KIMBER right now.
Yeah, no, I mean, I was mad impressed. It's funny how both Root and Harry Brook thought that it might have pitched outside leg, but it didn't. It was like targeting leg stump like a predator. And they both reviewed as well. And before, you know, the third umpire made a decision, they were walking off. They were like, oh, this clearly pitched in line, so we're goners. I really, really enjoyed that spell. And if you listen to what Akib had to say in the presser, he mentioned how earlier Vishwa was a bit stiff, and then he went out and kind of gave it everything and that worked for him. Well, you know, those figures read 3 for 40, but anyone who watched the innings knows exactly how crucial that spell was. And of course, then you have Lahiri Kumara. It's funny how both of us after the first test kind of, you know, predicted how Sri Lanka might bring him in because they lacked an enforcer. That's what he did in this third innings. He enforced 4 for 21. He's got pace. He's a big dude. And explain to me, Estelle, why does he get so much hate? Because that's what I'm able to kind of figure from your tweets and everything.
Yeah, so Lahiri Kumara is, to me at least, right? When you watch him bowl or you watched him from his early days, he's a natural athlete. You can see it in the way he runs up, right? He doesn't have to put a huge amount of effort to bowl the way he's bowling, right? Unfortunately, guys like that, it's either people put them on a pedestal or they want to burn them to the ground. And it's the same case for someone like Kusal Mendes, right? He's extremely talented, but he gets a lot of criticism because he doesn't perform well. Lahiri Kumara, what I personally don't like is criticism is fine, right? But, you know, questioning somebody's intellect is not okay. Yeah. Because in games, you could have the best strategy under the sun, but executing that is a different thing, right? And to execute that, there are so many factors that come in. It's not just your skill, right? It is a batter's skill as well. You could bowl really, really well, but the batter could be better than you on that given day or in that given session. So a lot of the criticism he gets from Sri Lankan fans is that he's stupid, or he bowls mindlessly, like he doesn't use his head, things like that, right? Which I think is uncalled for, because, you know, you can talk about him, you know, being wavered, and he's had issues with, you know, his lines and lengths and stuff like that. You can talk about that, and that's obviously a skill issue, right? But to go beyond that, I think is kind of uncalled for. It's the same thing as Vaughan talking about Ollie Pope being, you know, what did he call him? I can't remember. It's not done, right? So
yeah.
I'm happy to see him do well, because I think he's a really gifted bowler. I think, to be honest, he's underachieved all this while. He could have been, you know, one of the top test bowlers in the world right now if injuries and other things had gone his way. So it's good to see him performing well. And again, like, he is such an X factor, right? You don't get a lot of bowlers from our part of the world, from Sri Lanka, who can bowl at that pace and really hurry the batters, right? And if you look at, like, Sri Lanka's pace bowlers, now obviously you've got guys like Mathisha Pathirana, who brings a different sort of skill to the game. Dushmanta Chamira is also quick, but he doesn't have that kind of enforcer-type quality that Lahiru Kumara does. Kumara wasn't bowling anywhere close to 150, right? But he's still kind of rushing batters because of the way he bowls. So it's a difficult kind of situation for Sri Lanka also, because now they kind of have to figure out who their top two fast bowlers are when they play in Sri Lanka, because it's very unlikely that we will see three quicks, right?
I think it's impossible that we'll see three quicks. And my picks would... I mean, I think Lahiru Kumara should play, because even on dead tracks or flat tracks, I feel like he can get a bit out of them because he has those enforcer qualities.
I think the biggest concern about him also, I should mention, to be fair, is that he's had a lot of injuries, and he's had a number of occasions where he's played in a test as, you know, the second quick. And he's broken down after a couple of overs, leaving Sri Lanka in a fix. So, you know, those kind of issues have also cropped up during his career.
He definitely added value over here. And I feel like he was such an important part of this victory. You know, 4 for 21 in the third innings, and him and Vishwa kind of derailed England. And that's the reason why Sri Lanka had to chase 220 odd. So massive contribution from him. I've always kind of been a fan, because I like the way he bowls and I like his attitude, and he's a bit aggressive and in your face. And those are qualities that I enjoy in a fast bowler, right? And as far as the abuse goes, no player deserves it, even if they underperform. And this is a problem in South Asia in particular, where players are just taken to the cleaners and people feel like they're public property and they can say whatever the fuck they want to say to them. So, you know, that should stop, but it won't. And there was recently a piece on this as well about all the mental health side of things that players have to endure. And that would require a Footmarks or a different podcast on its own. So we won't go there. Let's go to more Sri Lankan performers before we go on to England. And the skipper, who has now, you know, won a test match in England, even though Sri Lanka lost the series, I feel like this is still important. And Dhananjaya De Silva, who we never hate on at good areas. Jared would fire us if we do. He, you know, is the original man in a crisis situation for Sri Lanka. I know Kamindu's kind of stepped in and partnered him or taken over that role slightly. But DDS is the guy who generally digs Sri Lanka out of a hole. And if you look at this test series, right, there are contributions in every single test. 74 at Old Trafford, 50 at Lord's, 69 at the Oval, which is a very important 69. He is someone who is ridiculously consistent at being the guy Sri Lanka look towards when things are not going right. And it really is remarkable, because I've seldom seen Dhananjaya De Silva do well when Sri Lanka are actually doing well in an innings, right? It's one of those things. It's a Stokes-type scenario.
Yeah, he seems to enjoy the pressure, right? I think in a sense, it also takes pressure off you, right? Because if everyone fails and you fail, then it's like, it doesn't really matter. But he's been really good in this series. I thought the way he was able to kind of support Kamindu was really good. I think Kamindu Mendis has a lot of, I mean, he owes a lot to DDS, because DDS was the one who kind of stuck with him and didn't, at least for a period of time, so that they could put together partnerships. I think, again, he would be disappointed he's not coming away with 100 in this series, because he had his opportunities, right? He got himself in and he looked comfortable in all those 50-plus innings, right? But just couldn't go the whole way. That's one area, I guess, he will want to look at, because he's been one of, you know, the most prolific number six batters in the world, right, over the last couple of years. So,
and Silky, don't forget Silky,
of course, great to watch again, right? I mean, between Pathum Nissanka, Kamindu Mendis and DDS, it's been a really, really what do you call it, like, it's been really nice to watch Sri Lanka bat, right? Because it's classical, but it's also, there are elements of power and, you know, aggression in it. So, like you said, we don't hate on DDS. I'm not 100% convinced about his captaincy yet, because there were some questionable things he said at the press conferences. But, I mean, first series in charge, hopefully he learns and gets better at it as time goes by.
Yeah, so Varun actually has a wonderful stat for us. He says that DDS averages 40.64 when the average fall of wicket is less than 15, right? That is insane. And I think, I mean, of course, you're looking at this from a Sri Lankan POV, but I feel like, you know, even if he didn't get that done, he was always there when Sri Lanka needed him. And as far as captaincy is concerned, hopefully he'll get better. There was, I think it was the first test where he kind of bowled first and... Second test, he bowled first. That was a point of debate where people said that, why didn't he just go with bat?
Yeah, that's actually a very interesting thing had happened behind the scenes as well. So what I hear from people who were in the press box was that Ian Bell, who has played a lot of cricket there, had suggested that Sri Lanka bat first. But they decided to go against his advice and bowl first. And the reason, and I don't know if this is the actual whole reason. I mean, it could be many little things. Is that, you know, the batters were under pressure and they wanted to give them a bit of a break, which is kind of, I mean, it doesn't make sense to someone looking from the outside, right? And I felt like that just gave the initiative to England in the second test. And that's one of the reasons I said, like, you know, there were opportunities for Sri Lanka to get ahead. And it didn't happen because of certain decisions. And again, you know, you hire someone as your batting consultant from the host nation for a reason, right? Because he knows the conditions and he knows, he would be in the best position to tell you, give you advice on how to go about things. But to go against what he said, I thought was quite interesting, because, I mean, like I said, you're hiring someone from the host country for that reason. If it's just a batting coach, you can hire him from anywhere. But you're getting someone from England because you think he has a better hold of, you know, how things will play out in England.
Maybe Sanath overruled him. Who knows? Who knows what actually happened over there in the dressing room? But yeah, it is startling because Ian Bell has such a vast experience of, you know, playing not only test match cricket, but test match cricket at Lords, right? He's played a lot over there in particular as well and done well. And you're playing Prabha Jaisuri as well. So maybe give him the fourth innings in that particular test. That's fair criticism. I think you're onto something over here. And if you look at that, or the start of that second test match, they actually got breakthroughs, right? England were, what, 130 odd for four? And that is where Joe Root comes and does what Joe Root always does, versus Sri Lanka in particular. The only test match I feel he hasn't done well versus Sri Lanka in his life is the Oval, the third test match, and then England lost that test. But at Lord's, Root goes on and rescues England from a tricky situation, scores 143 in his first dig, and then 103 in his second. So twin hundreds at Lord's, 34 test stuns in total, you know, equals Alistair Cook for, you know, the most ever hundreds ever scored by an English batter. And, you know, he's what, 3,500 odd runs away from Sachin now. So his stock just continues to rise in this period. Like, if you look at Joe Root's career, Estelle, from the end of 2012, when he debuted versus India in Nagpur, to the end of 2020, Joe Root had 17 tons in Test cricket. Since then, in this 3 to 4 year period, he scored 17. So he's doubled his tally. And in this same period, the combination of Smith, Kohli and Williamson have also scored 17 tons in total. So he is clearly at the top of the Fab Four conversation in Test cricket currently. And I mean, how do you stop him? When does he stop? Will this purple patch ever end? He's averaging over 50 once again in Test cricket. And barring that last test, this was a series to remember for Joe Root.
This was made in partnership with Hitwicket. Be a player, coach, selector, and everything else in a game on your phone.
Yeah, I mean, I think there was someone on commentary who said, like, we are witnessing greatness. And I think that's an apt way to put it, because he's been so good for so long over the last couple of years, right? It doesn't seem like he's ever out of form. And funnily enough, right, of all the English players, he seems to be the one who's taken to best ball the best, right? You would have expected him to be the one who struggled to kind of, you know, differentiate when he should attack and when he should, you know, go slow, because he's more of the classical type of test player. But he's thrived.
He reverse ramps, right?
Yeah, he's thrived in that environment. He's been brilliant. I mean, I will say one thing, and this is not to take away anything from how good Root is, but I don't think it's fair to compare him with guys like Williamson, who play like one third the amount of tests that Root plays. But the way he's kind of gone, like that second half, like you mentioned, right? He's just pulled away from everybody else in international cricket. And I mean, I like to say, you know, he plays double the amount of tests that everybody else plays or whatever. But that should also mean that other English players should be getting runs like him, right? And they are not. So there's obviously something that he's doing right. As much as I am sick of watching him get runs against Sri Lanka, you have to admit that he's been fantastic. And he's like, I mean, he's got runs against Sri Lanka in horrible spinning conditions against, you know, Ranganehera, Dilwan Pereira, now Prabhat Jayasurya, all those bowlers, right? So he's been brilliant for so long that it's, I mean, you can't contest that he's a great, right? He is one of the greatest batters.
I wonder where he falls on Jared's list of top 50 test batters, because he's currently working on that book, right? And Joe Root is definitely a part of the book. I just don't know exactly where Jared has ranked him. But I feel like, you know, it might be revised after his current or recent exploits. And one big asterisk with respect to Joe Root and Test cricket back in the day, and this is pre-2020 or 2021, used to be that his conversion rate isn't as good. Mm-hmm. Well, he's fixed that, right? And he is in all conditions, not all format, but he could be. He could have been. In another team, he could have been an all-format batter as well, right? This is just England, so it's different. Maybe Australia is that final frontier that he really needs to conquer. An Ashes ton or maybe three could really help bolster his case even further. But he's going great these days, and he's also an absolute treat to watch. So, you know, for someone to go and score twin tons at Lord's, and all of a sudden, you know, very recently we were saying he's 4,000 runs away from Sachin Staley, and now we're saying 3,500. So that just goes on to show you how solid a chance Joe Root has to overtake the, you know, little master. And we'll be doing
a footmark against Sri Lanka then. We should be advocating for that. Or he should be advocating for it.
He's got a series versus Pakistan coming up. So maybe he could add a few tons over there. And also, we'll be covering Joe Root at length in a Footmarks podcast as well. So you guys can stay tuned for that. Since we're talking about England performers, there was another one at Lord's. And he was an unlikely performer. Now, Sri Lanka were doing really well in the first innings. And in comes Gus Atkinson, this time with the bat, 118 at better than runner ball, right? Including some brilliant stroke play. There was this 1-6 over extra cover that was like, people started comparing it to Callis and whatnot. It made so many highlight reels. I saw plenty of reels on Instagram of it. And then in the same game, he takes 7 wickets, including 5 for 62 in the fourth innings. Estelle, Gus Atkinson has made 4 entries on the Lord's Honours board in 2 test matches, which is flat out ridiculous, right? I mean, not even 4, actually. He's made 5. Because in the first test, there were, you know, he got a fifer, then he got 2 fifers, a tenfer. I'm not sure if the tenfer goes on a separate entry. But 2 fifers, 12 wickets in total in his first ever test at Lord's, which was also his debut test for England versus the West Indies. And in this test, he got 118. So he's on the batting Lord's Honours board as well. And then 5 for 62 with the ball once again. Ridiculous. Bizarre.
Yeah, I mean, England were 216 for 6, right? When Chris Wokes was dismissed in that first innings of the second test. And then they go on to score 427. He makes 118 of 115. I think that's the other thing, right? He wasn't sticking around for Joe Root to get the runs. He was going after the Sri Lankan bowling and just changed the game on its head, right? Sri Lanka would have been justifying their decision to bowl first once they got England to 216 for 6. But then it went south from there. Look, as much as credit should be given to him, I think it's a bit flattering, the 118 in a test match. I'm not sure if I hope England don't think that that's a reason to push him up the order or anything, because, you know, tougher opposition are probably on the way later this year or maybe early next year. But yeah, I mean, it's always good to see a tail ender, as we call them, getting runs, right? That's always the most exciting part when you're watching a batting side, seeing the guys who don't usually get the limelight with the bat getting the runs.
There were some fantastic puns on Twitter that I came across. One was Gus Batkinson. And then there was one which was Gus Atkinton. I don't remember who tweeted these, but I saw them and they definitely made me chuckle. And just on England, one final thing before we wrap things up with a few points on Sri Lanka, right? Now, they're out of contention for the World Test Championship final, right? And they've got, what, Pakistan and New Zealand coming up. They are in this new phase or iteration of Bazball. They've had some retirements. It's generally a very, you know, inexperienced bowling attack. And they'll have Stokes and Crawley back for Pakistan. How do you see their test team overall? What do you think they need to fix? And do you see England competing for the World Test Championship final, say, in the next cycle?
Like you said, it's an interesting period of time for England, right? Because they've got, they're kind of in a transitional phase almost, particularly with the bowling, right? And now they've lost Wood for the rest of the year, if I'm not mistaken. So they are going to have to fill that gap. I thought it was interesting, the options they tried out. I mean, Josh Hull hasn't really played that much domestic cricket, but obviously, I mean, McCallum, I think he made a comment like...
Yeah, it's a quick whiz pick. Once again, release points and whatnot. And it was obviously...
And I mean, McCallum, I think, made a comment about, you know, if you look at him physically, it's not really that big of a punt because he has the kind of physical attributes to be a good fast bowler as well. But again, interesting to see so many options tried out. Like you said, now they've got nothing to lose, right? Because they're already out of contention for the World Test Championship. They can experiment a little bit. On the batting side, I think having Crawley back is going to be a huge boost, right? Because Dan Lawrence struggled. I think high score of 35 in the series. But again, the interesting thing for me was that he was gung-ho all 6 innings or all 5 innings they batted, right? Yeah. He wasn't taking a backward step, which is a good thing, but also makes you want to kind of question whether... You know, you need to kind of be attritional at some points in the game. So that means Crawley comes in as opener. Duckett has been good on and off, right? So it'd be I think they'll be in a good place come the next cycle. But then you have to think about what happens to Root. Does Ben Stokes continue? Because they've basically been carrying that batting lineup, right, over the last couple of years.
Johnny's gone. Kind of,
Bairstow's come from done. Behind stuff. Has been from Stokes' bat or Joe Root's bat. So It'll be interesting to see whether the other players can consistently take on that leading role. Brooke, I thought, looked really good in the first couple of tests, but didn't get any big scores, right? Like, you would have expected him to go past 100 a couple of times. So that'll be the big question, I think, for England.
Yeah, it is an interesting place to be because you've got exciting talents like Jamie Smith come and stake their claim. Harry Brooke didn't have a great series, just 150 in the first test, but we know that he is quality and we don't really know how good he can be. You know, maybe he doesn't have or doesn't continue to average over 50 in his test career because right now he's averaging around 53. And maybe he does. Who's to say? Because he's super young. And when I look at Duckett, I feel like he is very close to being a finished article already. And I wouldn't be surprised if he makes it to England's white ball team at this point, right? Because we've had some retirements over there as
well. I think he's got a Big Bash contract as well this season.
So. Yes, he does. So I'm mad impressed with Ben Duckett. I feel like given the rate or the risk that he plays with up top, he's averaging, what, 41, 42 with the bat in test cricket, which is ridiculous. So he's a positive. Crawley, you know, wins on the eye test versus Duckett, I suppose. He's more attractive to watch. And that pairing is working out for England quite well. So having Crawley back will help. Ollie Pope will stick around. Although I feel with Ollie, it's like one big score and lots of failures. That's kind of the trend that I've seen with him.
I think there was like a stat, I can't remember who had posted it, saying that, yes, he gets out for low scores a lot, but once he passes 25 or something.
Yes, he averages 83 points something. Yeah, I saw that too. Yeah. So that's an interesting one, right? Once he gets in, he goes for a big score, but otherwise it's almost always a low score. So he's an interesting cricketer in that regard. And then you've got Joe Root, Harry Brooke, Ben Stokes when he's back, Jamie Smith, who's young and exciting. So as far as the batting is concerned, I wouldn't be too worried. With the bowling, I mean, Gus Atkinson will play for the first time outside of England. And I don't know if Josh Hull will get, you know, a game in Pakistan or not, because, you know, losing Mark Wood is big. Right. He, of course, brings that X factor and, you know, can be lethal on any surface, really. And Josh Hull, even if, you know, it kind of checks out, a lot of people like the fact that it was an ambitious selection and everything. He took 16 wickets in 10 first class games prior. He did show promise in this particular test match, but I feel like he might be a bit undercooked for test cricket. And I feel like, you know, not every Crick Viz pick will work out like Shoaib Bashir and Tom Hartley, for instance, in India. So that's maybe something that, you know, McCullum and co need to look at. But they seem quite hell-bent on, you know, following that same sort of pattern. It's interesting. I would be really curious to see what England manage in Pakistan, and we'll discuss them now whenever we preview that series. I have some more stuff to talk about Sri Lanka with you. Now, first of all, tell me, Dinesh Chandimal, who had an interesting series, right? Scored 79 in the first test and 58 in the second. Didn't really work out for him in the third, but, you know, that blow that he took whilst keeping, he went for a full-length dive to save, or, you know, a four, or four byes or four wides, whatever. And then I think he landed maybe badly, hobbled off really slowly off the field. Do you have any update on him? Will he be all right?
That'll be an interesting one because the New Zealand series is like right after Sri Lanka get back, right?
Yeah.
So it'd be interesting to see whether he makes it. He's really, I feel very unlucky because Dinesh Chandimal was in supreme form in like 2022, right? He was making hundreds. He made that double hundred against Australia. Lots of runs under his belt. And then like the test season for Sri Lanka finished. And he had to wait like 7, 8, 9 months to play his next test. Here as well, I thought he looked good in a couple of those innings, but wasn't really able to kick on. I feel like if you look at his career on the whole, he's done really well, right? He's got runs against pretty much every opposition. He's made runs in difficult conditions. He's, you know, batted all over the batting lineup as well. But it does feel like he has underachieved a little bit. He was always like kind of touted as, you know, the next Mahela Jayawardena or Aravind De Silva or whatever, right? He hasn't quite reached those heights. But he's still been consistently good for Sri Lanka in that low middle order. So I'd be, I think they'd be a bit disappointed if they can't get him fit enough for the New Zealand tests, because he does bring a sort of stability to that middle order that doesn't seem to be coming from Angelo Matthews anymore, you have to say. There was a lot of discussion about his technique and stuff like that by the commentators. I mean, whatever he's done, it has worked to a degree, but you feel like in the last couple of years, he's been on the decline. So with guys like Kamindu and Pathumni Sanka kind of making the most of their opportunities, it does beg the question, right? Does Sri Lanka need to move on now from those senior players and start giving the younger players opportunities? Because the ability seems to be there, right? So, I on one hand, Sri Lanka would miss Chandimal if he doesn't get back to the team or isn't fit by the time the New Zealand tests come around. But at the same time, it's a good opportunity to test another player at home, right? Where they would be most comfortable.
You want to swing wildly at the internet like you've got the new pill in your hand, but you keep getting dead-butted. Find the movement you want with NordVPN. They are our protection against terrifying cyber threats and wide-battered geo-blocks. NordVPN will help you get through any rights restrictions so you can watch all the cricket you want. We aren't always happy with the wickets we're on. Sometimes we need a change. NordVPN can switch your virtual location so your IP address is ready to cash in. So if you need to get around the internet's rules, or I suppose in our case, laws, select NordVPN. They can help you watch a game on a cheaper stream in another country. Give NordVPN the ball and let them penetrate all your vast internet issues. Because if you need a VPN, go Nord. Use nordvpn.com/Kimber to get a huge discount off your NordVPN plan, plus 4 additional months for free. It's completely risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. You can also receive a 20GB daily data voucher. The link is in the show notes. Protect your computer like a big hitter is coming for you at nordvpn.com/KIMBER right now.
I actually think he's underrated. You think he's underachieved. I think he's slightly underrated because you have to consider the fact that he takes on like the wicket-keeping duties in Test cricket. Like he's wearing the gloves. So if you...
He doesn't do that often though, Biram. It seems of late that Sri Lanka have moved on from having like that specialist keeper, right? Because Dikwela was playing for a long period of time. Then they brought Madhushka as the keeper. Then they brought Sadira as the keeper. But they've kind of, I think, now decided they want to have a pure batter and get either Kusal Mendis or Chandimal to keep. So that's when he's taken the gloves.
Fair enough.
But otherwise, hasn't really. I mean, that's why, I don't know if we discussed this before, but if there is criticism of Chandimal, it's possibly that he should be moving up the order. If he's not keeping, he should be, as an experienced batter, he should probably be in the top four, right? And you can then give the younger players the opportunity to come in lower in the order and kind of get a grasp of Test cricket. I understand why you say underrated. I think in Sri Lanka, because there was so much talk about his ability, right, as a young player, there were a lot of high expectations of where he would end up. He's done well. I mean, I think he's done well, but he's still kind of underachieved.
Maybe across formats, yes, but I feel like Test cricket, he always kind of turns up fairly frequently. I've seen him do well versus Pakistan as well. And it's interesting how you said that number three position is up for grabs, but if Sri Lanka continue to play attacking cricket, I don't think Kusal Mendis is like, he could suit that position well if he just goes out there and attack. But maybe that's a conversation for a separate day. Last bit with respect to players that I want to talk to you about, Sri Lankan players in particular. We spoke about how important the series this is going to be for Dimuth Karunaratne, because most of his runs have come against, you know, weaker opposition, and he hasn't really performed overseas as well as he would have liked. And in this entire series, 6 innings, he has a solitary half century, 55 in a chase at Lord's where the game was already gone, right? So what does that say about his legacy now?
I mean, when we did the preview, I was telling you how important it's going to be, right, for his legacy. Yeah. Because if you look at the last decade, or, you know, from 2010 to 2020, it's difficult to look past him as one of the best Test openers, right? In a difficult period to bat.
Yeah. And he is averaging over 40. That hasn't changed. But it's just that when you break those numbers down, you look at his performances versus the likes of England, Australia, South Africa, you won't see a lot of, you know, runs over there. I don't know what the exact numbers are, actually. I can even dig them up.
Yeah. So overall, his runs, right? He has an average of 21 against Australia. 29 against England, and 27 against India. So the big three are the three countries where he's averaging less than 40, right? Everyone else is 40, 45 plus, right?
Nice.
But those are the three that matters. Like I told you, I was talking about before as well, like with Asita Fernando, he's been doing really well, but now he got the opportunity to perform against one of the big three, and that's when everyone's paying attention, right? So I think,
and an inexperienced English bowling attack as well. So this was kind of the series in which he had to cash in.
Yeah.
And there were some dismissals over there which really were un-Karunaratne-like. Right? Especially when he was out pulling the ball. It was weird.
Yeah, it feels like there's a lot of indecisiveness in the way he goes about things, and that could be a reflection of his form. Because like when you're in form, it's almost like muscle memory, right? The shots that come to you. But he did seem to me at least like he's not quite sure how to go about things, which is sad. I think in terms of his legacy, right, I don't know whether he will be able to kind of bring his reputation up as one of the best openers in Test cricket. I think certainly in Sri Lankan context, you can consider him one of the best openers we've seen from Sri Lanka, right? But I don't think globally he can get to that level even if he makes a lot of runs in South Africa, right? There's still this big hole of not making runs against England. And those numbers I told you are not in England or in Australia. It's against those teams, home and away. He's probably the most disappointed, because Dimuth Karunaratne is a guy who does look at how he plays and looks at his milestones and where he needs to get to. And he's very practical that way.
He wants to play 100 test matches, right? Yeah, he said that time and again.
And he wants to get 10,000 runs. And this, probably one of his worst overseas outings, right? Because there was so much expected from those three experienced batters in particular, Dimuth, Angelo and Chandimal. And all the good work came from the young players. So I think overall, it would have been quite disappointing for the three of them, the way things went. Dimuth, like I said, he sets high standards for himself, right? So he knows that he doesn't have the record in England, and he would have been keen to get some runs. But like you said, some of those dismissals really didn't look good in terms of like England wasn't that threatening with the ball also, right? If you're being realistic, this wasn't England's best attack we've seen over the last couple of years. They've had a lot of, they've had retirements and they've had injuries and stuff like that. So not being able to capitalize on that, I think, will be a huge disappointment for him.
I would say the last two decades, really, as opposed to a couple of years, right? Because England have always had, even before Anderson became Anderson, Harmison was doing really well. And you had Simon Jones in between for a bit. Like, they've always had a very, very, or more than decent, bowling attack, seam bowling attack at home. This was perhaps the most inexperienced one. So that is an opportunity missed for Karunaratne. But maybe he scores a daddy 100 in South Africa. Who knows? Okay, so let's take that super chat now. We only got one in this particular episode. And it is from V! He says or asks, post Sanga Mahela era, is this the best Sri Lankan team? Good question. Really good question. Are we talking about Test cricket in particular? Because I feel like they've had some more success, in the past. But overall, if I look at Sri Lankan cricket, like all formats considered, I feel like this might be it.
It's a very tough question and I don't have like an answer for you. But what I will say is, in terms of promise, it is an exciting period of time for Sri Lanka cricket. Like, I mean, if you look at the white ball teams as well, suddenly you have like 2, 3, 4, 5 players who you're kind of thinking this guy could be something, right?
Yeah.
And similarly, fortunately, because we got to see guys like Kamindu and Pathum in this series, you kind of have that hope for the test team as well, right? Because like I said, Pathum Nisaka is 26 years old. Kamindu Mendis is probably around the same age or younger, right? And of course, we haven't seen Charit Asalanka in test cricket. I don't know whether we will, but he's another guy who kind of was earmarked as a three all format player for Sri Lanka, right? So in terms of promise, I think it does seem like now is the time where, you know, young players are doing well in international cricket. But if there's anything we learn from Sri Lanka cricket is that sometimes it hurts to hope, because there's a lot of promise and there's a lot of pain also. But yeah, I mean, if that's kind of an answer, I would say, yeah, it's a good time to be a bit optimistic.
No, I would definitely concur. And I think that, you know, they've got some fantastic talents up their sleeve. It's just about kind of getting things right on the field. And like, to end this podcast, Estelle, of course, Sri Lanka won at the Oval, but they did lose the series, right? 2-1. So, you know, as far as takeaways go, of course, there's some young blood that came to the fore and, you know, announced themselves. But, I mean, where does Sri Lanka cricket go from here? And how do you view as a the series as a fan? Because, of course, winning a test match at England is always big news. And the team will probably be excited with this. But will they get carried away, perhaps? Or how would they be feeling about losing the series overall?
Look, I don't know how they will be feeling. I think there will be consolation, obviously, with the last win. But I think this is one series that, in years to come at least, people will look back and kind of think it's one that got away. Because there were so many opportunities. I mean, just to go back to the discussion we were having about Root and Atkinson, right? England 216 for 6, end up with 427. That is one massive opportunity that Sri Lanka have let go of, right? Apart from that, there were so many times when Sri Lanka got a good partnership going, right? Two batters well set, and then a soft dismissal and a collapse, right?
Yeah.
That happened, I think, I would say in every test. Right? So there were certainly opportunities, and to come back to England, I mean, no disrespect to them, but they are, like we discussed, a team in a bit of a transition. This is not their best bowling attack, right? And they didn't really bat as well as we've seen them bat in previous years, right? I mean, they always give you that opportunity to come back into the game. So I feel like it's one that people might look back and wonder, because I mean, I saw an interview with Sanath Jayasurya saying like there's no point in these 50s, they need to be, you know, big scores. And I think that's fair, because the conditions, like if you look at it, I know it sounds stupid when I say if you look at it as a neutral, but like if you look at it objectively, the conditions were not tough to bat in for the majority of the series, right? There were, on occasion, you know, the conditions suiting English bowlers and, you know, the balls moving around and stuff like that. But for the most part, it wasn't.
Yeah.
Add to that, Sri Lanka coming into this series with three very senior batters, or four batters, who have played in England in the past, right? Two bowlers who have played county cricket. Right, so they're not coming into this series completely green. So I think when you consider all of those things and how the games went, like I said, like before the series, most people were predicting 3-0, right? But given how the series went, I think there will be a little bit of regret thinking about, you know, this might have been the one that got away. It could have been like another massive series win for Sri Lanka, but unfortunately it didn't go their way. But at least it's not 3-0, right? Because 3-0 would have completely kind of, you know, all the good that has been done during the three tests would have gone away if it was 3-0. So at least that one test gives them a bit of consolation.
Yeah, well, you say that most people predict 3-0. We weren't most people. Both of us said 2-1 or 1-1. So we're going to wear that, you know, badge of honor or whatever.
I have to say, like, even there's a saying, right, that even a broken clock is right twice a day.
Yeah. Okay. I'm fine with that analogy. And weirdly enough, in the four test wins that Sri Lanka have had in England, Sanath has been part of three of those, right?
Yeah, and also
two as a player,
the Oval,
one as a coach. Yeah.
The Oval, right? The Oval, the last time Sri Lanka, and it's interesting because in 1998, Sri Lanka played at the Oval. They were given the solitary test. And we discussed this in our Crick Picks episode as well. Solitary test. England weren't, like, the England players didn't really care. Sri Lanka took it to heart that they were being kind of insulted with this one test. But they were given the one test at the Oval where conditions can be suitable for, you know, slow bowling. And it was at the end of the summer, right? Sri Lanka won that. they didn't get a test at the Oval for the next 26 years. Then they get another one. They didn't get another test in August, September,
yeah,
between 98 and 2024, right? And they get another test in the Oval late summer and they win again. So I wonder if we have to wait another 26 years to see something like this happen. Maybe someone had said, I think on Twitter, Pathum Nissanka will be coached by then.
That's hilarious. Well, only time will tell, but that is a nice little anecdote over there towards the end. Thank you to everyone who came in the comments and, you know, interacted with us. And thank you for the super chat, V! That kind of wraps up this episode or this review of the England versus Sri Lanka Test Series. As promised, we'll be back with even more live shows with more frequency on Good Areas. That's kind of the model now where we react to the cricket. And just a quick reminder to everybody, you can go to goodareas.co and bookmark that webpage. It can prove to be your one-stop shop for all the work that we do as part of our team, whether it be written content, videos, or podcasts. So, we'll see you guys soon enough once again. And thanks. Hope you guys have a good couple of days or however long it takes for us to come live again. That's it for this podcast. You guys enjoy yourselves. Goodbye.
Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bairam Kazi and Estelle Vasudevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recordings. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. If you make a lot of content like me, you will need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up great clips from your podcast chats and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.